Nobody spills the scalding hot tea quite like Vivacious, the RuPaul's Drag Race superstar who gets a front row position whenever Katy Perry or Miley Cyrus need some dazzling queens to add opulence to their shows.
Season 11 of Drag Race is now underway, and our Chicago pizza parlor queen, Silky Nutmeg Ganache, is seen as the front runner, even though some of her fellow contestants and online polls feel she's obnoxious. Is Silky really all that intolerable, or is she facing a double standard that loud and proud drag queens of color have to endure?
Today, Mother has arrived! Vivacious, the girl underneath that floating head of Ornacia, joins us to weigh in on the RuPaul's Drag Race Season 11 girls and help us decide who has what it takes to be America's next drag superstar again.
Plus, new year, new queens, new memes. Learn them here first.
Hashtag single vigil. Hashtag wigonometry. And hashtag wig association.
Sisters are doing it for themselves.
And Grace Jones wins Paris Fashion Week while walking the catwalk at the age of 70 for Tommy Hilfiger. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Feast of Fun is made possible because of the support of fierce, fabulous people like you. Become a member and listen to 14 years of amazing podcasts at feastoffun.com/plus. Or put a tip in our tip jar and make a one-time donation at feastoffun.com/donate. Thank you for your support.
Hello.
Miss Vivacious?
I had to go across the room and get the dildo out the way.
Mother has arrived.
Actually, no. I had to go get the fan. I'm like, you hoes taking too long.
How you been, girl? I don't think we've talked to you since they got rid of porn on Tumblr. How you keeping yourself busy these days?
Well, first of all, I am the god emissary of Tumblr.
What do you mean by that?
Once I learned that they was going to take Miss Tumblr down, I went out and bought a 256 gig card just to save every single porn and picture from that site. I was told by the higher powers and the higher beings, you must save Tumblr for those who can't save it themselves. Technically speaking, I am the Noah that built the ark to save Tumblr.
So you got the dicks 2x2 inside you.
Yes, bitch. I used that card, Miss Sting, and I downloaded and I saved everything to that card because I knew in the future, honey, the children needed to see the light.
Wow.
So you're watching these videos and stuff from your, they call this the sneaker net. It's the internet done on foot. Like, if you want to share it with a friend, you put on a flash drive or a SD card and you bring it over to their house.
No different than what we used to do when CDs first came out, honey. We used to meet up at the club and went, here's your music, here's your music, here's your music. And that's actually the same way how in Cuba they get information around. They download to hard drives and sell copies of copies to other people, and that's how they get their content. They did a documentary on this about 2 years ago.
So you just go and buy a hard drive and it's got a bunch of movies on it.
They'll have like maybe a few main sellers that can sneak something off from the mainland into Cuba, and then it's being copied and copied and copied and copied and copied and just sent around the island, and that's how people are able to slightly still catch on to what's new or what's going on in the real world, because based on what's going on over in Cuba, they don't have direct access to many things.
Well, just like on Jurassic Park, life and horrors will find a way.
Any hole is a goal, according to Miss Aquaria.
So season 11 is underway, and here in Chicago, it's really cold, so it's nice to be able to watch some high-quality television featuring drag queens on the tube. And your gal pal, Honey Davenport, is on this season.
Yes. You know, it was so fun because I've worked with her on multiple occasions, and one of the reasons why I gravitated to her was because it is not easy to take over a whole borrow by yourself.
A borrow, a cup of sugar?
B-O-R-R-O-U-G-H, a borrow.
Oh, we say borrow.
Borrow. Borrow.
Like a New York is five boroughs, right? You got Queens, you got Manhattan.
Right. She took over a borough, which is the Bronx.
Okay.
And in the 7 years that she was there, she has, man, the minute that, so what most people don't know is Honey Davenport was actually Peppermint's male backup dancer back in the day.
Mm.
And then she decided to take to drag, and then she ended up with a few drag mothers, Deja Davenport, and a few others.
She's the drag niece of the dearly departed Sahara Davenport.
Yes, because Deja was her drag mother.
And Kennedy Davenport. They're all interconnected. And then yes. She was drag mother to Monet Exchange. And she has relationships to Dita Ritz, to you, and to Mystique Summers as well.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. This girl created a drag culture and a gay culture and a dance environment in a borough that there was nothing there. And she rocked that shit for over 7 years. And by the time she decided to leave from the Bronx, when she felt that she honed her craft enough to come down into the rest of the city, her party was doing about 2,500 gay, Spanish, Black, Latino children on a week-to-week basis. By herself. That's what she cultivated. The sad part is, you know, the city and, you know, laws shut down the area, so they now had nowhere else to go, etc. But that's where Honey Davenport is. She's a pioneer, she's a creator, and she's very, very talented. And yeah, it was happy to know that she made it to the season.
She's being sort of challenged or shooken by our Chicago pizza parlor queen, Silky Nutmeg Ganache, who is a pageant holder on her own turf. A lot of people don't know that. Just like Honey Davenport, she's won a few pageants in the area. She's definitely coming across as very obnoxious. According to a poll in one blog called Golderby.
Yep, I see it right here.
Says that 70% of their readers agree with Ariel Versace, the Instagram queen, that she is straight up obnoxious, and she's had it officially.
Well, here's the thing. And I worked in the straight part of New York club life for over 20-something years. I worked with a very loud bitch. I'll just call her ass Voldemort. But what I've learned is this.
Thou shall not speak her name.
Exactly. Mess that shall not be named, Voldemort. This is what I've learned from working with somebody like that. Your job in life, you have one job in life. You bring your best A game to the table at all times. And if you're good at what you do, no matter how much bluster the other person have, people will start to see through the haze and the bullshit and the hyper talking and realize, you're the real deal. The one that talks softly but delivers the goods. So I don't let something like a Silky Ganache Nutmeg bother me in that sense. Because if you know how to bring it, you just bring it.
Yeah.
Let her do what she do, you know. And if she beats you, guess what? This is how I believe drag should be. And for me, this is what I always do. I don't believe in hiring people around me in terms of drag queens that can only perform less than me. I always try to find bitches who are fiercer than me to force me to always step myself up. So if you can't live up to Silky's loudness, dig deep in yourself and figure out how to. Because having that trait is not necessarily a bad thing. Because, I mean from what we're seeing right now, it looks like loud is the new viral trend. It started last season with Miss Banji. So, and then in that episode, you saw Mother Rue walk across the hall to stir the pot with the other children to go, you know, them children over there says you too loud and X, Y, and Z. And I never thought she was going to do that to stir that pot.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought it was interesting that she said to the group, and she's like, well, if she's, you know, if this is how she is like, and she's getting all the attention, you better think about that. What are you doing to get the attention?
Right, exactly. You still have to stand out. At the end of the day, drag is not a wallflower thing. Drag, you know, think about this. There is 952 Drag Race children that have now made it to that TV show. And out of those 952, only Angina, Nina Flowers, and myself are the only three bitches who stand out because we are not part of the Wig Association.
The what?
The Wig Association.
What's the Wig Association?
Bitches who only put on drag to wear wigs. Honey, I'm not from that school, and I don't want to be from that school.
Isn't Sasha Velour also a bald beauty?
She's still considered a theater queen from the Wig Association. She knows how to put those things on.
Oh, so what you're saying is that for those three queens, you guys are diehard, determined not to ever be seen in public with a wig. I have a photo of you wearing a pink wig, Vivacious.
And you looked quite lovely, I must say.
Oh, bitch, throw them things away. What?
You can't even buy merchandise with you. I think one of your fans, doesn't one of the fans you sell actually have a pink wig on it?
Yes, girl. That was called. Let's try to conform. That's called. Let's try to. Listen, years ago when I started in drag, I used to be a wig bitch. I can show you old pictures with me in wigs. But guess what I learned over the years from all those club owners?
What?
We would rather pay you pebbles when you wear them wigs. But when you come with them costumes, we will pay you real money.
Now, I got to share this story, and this is a Feast of Fun exclusive.
Okay.
No one else knows this story, and this is a good tea.
All right, let's hear it.
So Camp Wanakiki was the Sugar Baker Twins' foray into drag reality TV competition.
That's the show you were on as a bear.
I was dressed up as a bear. I was one of the judges on the third episode, the best episode.
What was the concept for the show?
The concept of the show was eight queens sent to prison and given a shiv, and they're fighting each other for a biscuit.
No, really tell the people what it was for.
It's eight queens in the middle of nowhere in a summer camp fighting to be the queen of camp. And
why wasn't I invited to do it?
Because you were on Alt for Norge, Norway's number one reality TV show, where 12 Norwegian Americans of Norwegian ancestry retrace their roots in a great, amazing race style show.
That's right.
And Mark almost won.
I almost won.
Almost won, but he did. But with Silky Ganache, I was talking with a friend about how to prepare yourself for reality television. And
she was cast on it.
She was cast on it. I probably should not have been giving them advice, but I was like, you know, I wanted this person.
Friend.
She's my friend, and I wanted them to do well. And so we're sitting on Halsted Street having a slice of pizza, and this thick and juicy and delicious pizza girl leans over and says, "Can I get you anything else?" And that pizza girl is Silky Nutmeg Ganache.
But she overheard your conversation.
She overheard our conversation. She was thinking we were talking about RuPaul's Drag Race because she, at the time, was being considered for it, and it was still up in the air. And so I said to Silky and to my friend, I said, the number one thing that they want is to understand your motivation. As Vivacious says, Shiwana and Shanita is your two best friends, right? So if you can talk about why you want to win, why you're doing these weird things, why, talk about your inner space, your inner mind. No matter how the other contestants see you, even if the editors don't like you, the audience at home is going to connect with you. And I think in some ways, this is Silky's interpretation of that idea, is that by acting out, because Silky, in my experience with her, she's very nice. She's very even tempered. She's very calm and mild manner, actually. So to me, seeing her, this version of her on the show is very similar to Adore Delano's with Laganja Estranja, is that to some degree, we're seeing a side of Silky Ganache that she's always wanted to express. And now that she's in this forum, she's able to execute that. But in Chicago and for the queens here, you know, for the most part, we don't know her as this, like, dynamic, you know, big mouth, obnoxious kind of person.
Well,
but after she got on the show, some shit went down on social media, and that's starting to change people's perceptions on Silky. But before that, she was not this kind of person.
I guess people are like mad at her because she wanted to get into a club because like her, she was outside having, she was going to get some fast food or something. She wanted to get into the club. She wanted to get comped to go into the club. And they were like, no, you got to stand in line with everybody else. She's like, I only wanted to go in for 10 minutes to say hi to my friend. It's like, I'm not paying 10 bucks and standing in line.
I agree with that.
You know? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so they all read her to filth for that.
If anything, what she should have had done was tell those friends to come outside and come speak to her. A club's door is business, business, business. If you don't want to pay the fee to come in, if no one wants to pay the fee to come in because they're too legendary, well, honey, how do we pay for the light bills, pay for the queens, pay for the people who work there, pay the vendors that support and give their services to the space? So maybe she should have just thought to have just call those friends from the inside and go, could y'all come outside for 5 minutes so I could say hello instead of trying to put it on the club? But I think also in the process, in that story, I think it was her friends who was with her that was telling the owner, don't y'all know who this is?
Mm-hmm. If you get cast on Drag Race, any gay bar would be foolish not to let you in for free, to be able to say you were there.
Well, honey, if that's the case, you go tell that to Murray and Peter for trying to tell Monet she couldn't go and live her life with Madonna.
What exactly happened there? So,
yeah. Oh, yes, I went there, honey. I'm not poking the bear. I'm tapping the bear. Tap, tap. So what had happened was Fifi O'Hara
season 4 loser
were tapped for to do a music video with Madonna. Fifi, according to Fifi's post, it came too late. I think for Fifi, it was like the day before. Either way, with Monet, I think the same thing might have happened. But honey, before Monet got to that stage, Monet packed that bag and ran right out the door and rescheduled her own flight to fly to New York. I think it might have been, or whatever place Madonna was. I think it was to New York, L.A.
It was in another city.
To go meet with Madonna immediately, because when the real queen calls, you show the hell up. In my contract, it says if an act of God is the only thing that will make me leave a booking, and Madonna is an act of God.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of things I don't understand. So for people not familiar, Murray and Peter is not the corporate fruit and nut company that sells you, you know, a box of pears at Christmas time. Although they do specialize in overpriced fruits and nuts. But Murray Peter put on lavish shows with drag queens, all Drag Race girls, and they travel around the country, and they're known for the haters roast, right? So they ask all the queens to stand there, and much like the Comedy Central shows, they roast each other. And it's hilarious. It's all good fun. And I guess Monet was about, she actually was at the gig and left, right?
I think,
she showed up.
I mean, it doesn't matter. Madonna calls, you get the hell up and you leave Dodge ASAP.
It was like hours before the show was about to start. She's like, listen, I gotta go, honey. Madonna is calling. I imagine backstage everyone's like, do it, do it, do it.
I would be. I'd be like, go, go, go.
Well, here, the sad part is this. Murray and Peter are very short-sighted. I don't remember if you remember this story, but about 8 months ago or 9 months ago, Murray and Peter went online and literally ripped Alyssa Edwards to shreds in a post. Oh, she's unprofessional. She will not be working with us anymore because she canceled a gig. Murray and Peter, just like All-Star Management with Natasha Bouton.
Murray and Peter then posted on social media that they were very disappointed in Monet, and they felt that she canceled because of Madonna. They even pointed out it was Madonna, and people like Jackie Beat, Bob the Drag Queen are all saying boycott Murray. Trinity Tuck Taylor, all them with unanimous are saying boycott Murray and Peter. And then a couple days later.
But people got roused up, you know, and things blew up and people were excited and like, fuck them. And she should be able to do what they want. And then it became like this big outroar and people were like, we're going to take charge into our hands. And then a couple days later.
Hello, it's me, Lady Bunny. Does someone have a gig they need filling? I'll take it.
And now nobody's complaining about that.
It's me. I'm last. I'm at the gig too.
I wrote to Lady Bunny.
The Bun has spoken.
The Bun Bun has spoken. I had said to her, I thought we were supposed to boycott Maria Peter. What happened with that? And she said, Drag queens do not boycott the hands that feed them.
Well, it's up to you if you want to take that hand that feeds you. I mean, you know, that's a personal up to you.
What do you make of this? Like, what would you have done if you were in Bunny or, you know, Monet's shoes?
I'll tell you this much. I would do both.
Well, you would boycott and...
and snatch the gig.
Yes,
and
take the gig. Listen. My name at the end of the day is Get the Gig, bitch. Okay? So if Madonna calls me for a bigger gig, I'm taking the gig. And if I was in Bunny's shoes where I'm like, oh, you mean I could go on a tour and you'll offer me X and X amount of money per day? Yes, I will take it too. But here's the sad part. Murray and Peter are a bunch of short-sighted people who can't see the bigger picture. All they had to do from the beginning go, ladies and gentlemen, Monet will not be here for 3 weeks, but she will continue the tour after 3 weeks because she has gone to go and do a music video with Madonna. Mm-hmm. You can use that as a hype and make your company look fierce that you are flexible enough to work out a last minute interrupt in your schedule of things. Because when Monet comes back on that trip in 3 weeks, all the people in the next city are going to be hyped up on that. And then you can say in the process, Monet has promised us that next year when we do this tour in the three cities that she missed, she will come on just for those three cities to make it up to the fans who didn't get to see her this time around. And all those people would still be happy about it because by then the video will have come out. She would have had an extra hype to her name. It made them look good that they're flexible in the process. The queens, technically speaking, do not need a tour group because a tour group actually pays you less money than you doing it as a single vigil. I use the word single vigil, hashtag I created that damn word, because
you named when
you travel
child
as a single
as vigil.
A, damn right, bitch. See, RuPaul.
My daughter's single vigil.
Had you kept me on the show, bitch, you would have had more hashtags to work with. Now you need to fix that. You work as a single visual, you can make more money as an entertainer because when you work in a group process, they're asking you to please dummy down your rates to make it work overall for the tour. Mm-hmm. And then to make it worse, Murray and Peter, they're very tact. They're very tacky and tact. Is the word tactless or tactful? When you have no tact, you're tactless.
Tactless,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're very tactless because then a few days later, they went online and said, $5.3 million is what we have allowed the Drag Race girls to make so far from working with us and being on tours. Girl, hush the hell up. Bianca makes that by herself.
She makes that for lunch.
Bianca is a standout. It doesn't matter.
These queens, if they knew how to... First, my philosophy on top five is this. If you make it to top five in your own personal season and you don't know how to perpetuate your name on Drag Race, you are doing drag wrong. You don't need to come back for All-Stars. You know who need to be on All-Stars? Bitches like me. If you're in the top five on your season and you don't know how to make a bigger name for yourself that you don't need a repeat for All-Stars, you're doing drag wrong. Because let me tell you something. Before I came to that show, I know what I needed to do to make a bigger name for myself. Exposure, being on the show longer, can help you get that done. Mm-hmm. And if I had been on the show longer, I guarantee you at this point in the game, y'all would have heard, oh, Miss Thing, black girl over there has a party doing X, 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 X. And there'd probably be some rumors right around now going, she's about to open up her own club. I don't need to win Drag Race to do bigger things for the LGBT community. I just need a little bit more exposure on that show so I could show y'all what my intentions would have been from the beginning, because I didn't get into this 27 years ago because I was a me queen. In everything that I've ever done, I've always employed multiple people underneath me to work with so that I could also provide them some form of financial support.
I think if you keep on doing what you're doing, it's inevitable that you'll be on All Stars.
Well, as we're speaking right now, I am fixing my last flaw in terms of what I do as an entertainer. And the last thing that I could never do is wigs. And so right now I bought some video tutorials from a wonderful company, and I've been learning from them, and I've been learning a lot from from the videos for the last 2 weeks. And I'm waiting until God gives me that epiphany and what to do, because once he gives it to me, y'all gonna be like, this bitch done broke the wig code.
Honey, you got the eye of the tiger. You've been defeated, but you have been training. You got the hunger. Your purse is snatched, and you're ready to snatch the crown.
You're going to take over the Wig Association.
One of the things that I hate in life is people who fall down and don't know how the fuck to get back up. I will never let anybody knock me down. Never.
Sisters are doing it for themselves.
Sisters will rise, honey. Sisters will rise.
Soju, who is a Chicago queen here.
They list her as an LA queen now, though.
And now she's an LA queen. LA. She's got on Drag Race. She's kind of like Pearl. She couldn't wait to pack her bags and get out of this town.
Monique Hart did the same thing, too. The bitch moved straight to LA, but it does make sense for Monique to move there if she just, you know, if she's on the top four of Drag Race, because it now gives her accessibility to the things that she needs to get done ASAP. You know, there's a full production studio underneath RuPaul's Drag Race building. And so from there, hopefully, once she gets time off from the show, mm-hmm. she can get to launch and do the things of her endeavors. But I did not know that Soju ran to L.A. too.
Ran or chased?
Either way, just like Kimchi, Soju has roots here in Chicago. And she is a queen who was forged in the fires of the club scene and the communities here in town. So there's a lot of influence, and there may be some tension between her admiration for Kimchi, season eight top three mm-hmm. queen, who's star of Peaches Crisis Mean Gays, now on tour.
And one of our best episodes of Cooking with Drag Queens.
And so there's a little bit of tension, right? Because Soju initially wanted to call herself Soju Chi, and Kimchi, I guess, may have given her some shade about it. And so Soju had to drop that. So now she calls herself Soju Juicy?
Love.
Soju Love.
But she might change it to Sist, though, I think. Because it has more of a pop.
And Soju has a lot of good.
More of a pop.
I'm so sorry. That took me 3 seconds too long to get. Soju is somebody who's capable of amazing looks. You know, you look at her social media, mm-hmm. she's a really visually stunning right. queen.
But she's a queen that's always been here in Chicago. People have criticized her because they feel as though she's somebody who just, rather than use her creativity, she's just somebody who bought her way into drag. She's somebody who comes from affluence, and so everything was bought and paid for. Nothing was created.
And we don't know that for sure.
We don't know that's rumors.
It does kind of show, because how are you going to go on stage with a costume that can't stay up? It's season 11. Mm-hmm. The whole time she was doing her elimination number, she was literally holding a costume for dear life, because those that ring around the body of tulle that Vanjie told her not to do was the only thing holding up that dress. Miss Sting. As Sugar Cane said to the queen whose earrings fell off walking in the room, Raja O'Hara, bitch, you better be crazy gluing and stapling things to your body. You're on national TV for season 11. You shouldn't mm-hmm. have anything falling off. And Kimchi had an outfit that was trying to pull a 9/11 on her. She tried to stay up and it tried to come down. And I'm like, no. I'm not forgiving anything like that, because it's season 11. You have to know how to construct a costume.
Did you just by accident call Soju Kimchi? You did.
I think I just did. Because I think also racist. I think that's also the main reason why probably Kimchi had a problem with Soju, because it's like, here you are literally trying to bite off everything that I've built and created with a slight spin. You are known as Ariel Sinclair said, Versace said, you are known as the internet queen only for interviewing queens. Interviewing queens should not give you an in to Drag Race.
But that, you know, in some states that's not really fair, because she does perform in drag. She has gone out. Maybe Ariel only knows her from the internet, because Ariel doesn't necessarily work in Chicago much. But, you know, she hosts events. She's at clubs. She's been in shows. I don't know how she performs in a club.
We did a show with Soju.
We did?
Yeah, with Alaska. Soju was dressed up as...
she was. That's exactly right.
As Little Miss Poundcake.
Yeah.
And she did really good, and mm-hmm. she looked fantastic.
Right.
And she did her own costume. costume. Mm-hmm. I have receipts. I have photographic evidence. I was there. So for people saying that Soju is not a performer, mm-hmm. is the same kind of discrimination that I face as somebody who interviews a lot of drag queens myself. Doing this podcast on Cooking with Drag Queens, it's a, you know, people are quick to dismiss you if you have one more hat in the pan on the fire, so to speak. And just because you're good at one thing doesn't mean you can't be good at something else. Mm-hmm. And if they're just not familiar with what you do, doesn't mean you can't do something. Like, people are shocked when Mark puts on drag and snatches the crown at these contests.
Wow. I wouldn't say that.
You know, Mark is a fierce drag queen.
I am very beautiful, though. I'm thinking about changing my name.
What are you changing your name to?
I don't want to say yet, because I'm afraid somebody's going to steal it. But I came up with a last name.
Can't you just... Well, no, yeah?
They can steal your name, but they can't steal the entity of what you present as a queen.
That's true.
So you don't. So you're bringing it up, but you don't want to tell us.
So when I was in Norway this past year, I met somebody, and her name was Girl, and it's spelled J with an O and a slash the O, R R E L. Girl. And so I was thinking, how about this for a last name? So it would be Girl Bye.
Girl Bye?
Yeah.
That's not a bad name. I believe, you know, listen, my name is very straightforward, but I've always believed in drag queens who had names that, you know, had a little punch kick to it at the same time, where you're like, oh, what, bitch, I live for that name. You know, like, I have a daughter named Pollyanna Pussybag and another one called Iron Uterus.
Well, that's the thing about these drag names. It's like, they're great when the first time you hear them, mm-hmm. but then you're like signing checks with that name.
Well, I mean, drag is punk. Drag is the punk of society. You know, it is the rebel of the norm. Drag is the antithesis of what the Bible wants everybody to be. And so our job is fuck your religion, fuck this, fuck that. We're going to do us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on a corporate level, sometimes having a negative drag name, quote unquote, the word negative, because for LGBT people, it's not a negative name. It might not help you to get far in life. Like, you know, think about it. Alaska had to change her name to Alaska 3000 because Thunderfuck is not a name that you could put on national TV.
Well, she
you
know,
Well, she used to be called Alaska 5000, but with the economy, it's 3000.
Yeah. And also, in some places, it appears as Alaska Thunder Fun.
Right.
She's our drag daughter.
She's our drag daughter. Did you know that Alaska's our drag daughter?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I said to her, girl, fuck ain't going to get you in the door, but fun will. Actually, this show used to be called Feast of Fuck, too.
Let me change it to Feast of
Fuck. Stop making shit up, bitch. Stop making shit up.
She didn't really. She's got a book out there under the name Alaska Thunder Fun.
Yeah.
It's kid friendly, you know?
It's a coloring book. And you can color her tits any color you like.
Bianca also has jokes that are sometimes so off to the side that when she did go on Australia, Good Morning Australia, they couldn't even air one piece of her work on TV to show people how funny she is because all of it was politically incorrect. So walking on the edges sometimes might not be so beneficial to you.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a queen who's, she's a East Coast queen, too, Scarlet Envy, also known for her Instagram account. And her catchphrase of the season is, why are you feeling, let me imitate her well, why are you feeling her out? Don't you realize that there are other outs here, too?
Sounds like another Gia Gunn.
She just won, right?
Yeah, Gia Gunn won something?
No.
Oh, Scarlet Envy won this week, yes.
Yeah.
My roommate is at the point where the show is now getting to be too predictable. For instance, he believes that them complaining that Silky Ganache is loud, now they're going to try to use some narrative to make her team win and then put her in the top, whereas the other team who claims, well, we do theater and we do it in such an age way, and now they be at the bottom.
Well, let me ask you this, you know, as a person of color, vivacious. You know, there's all we've seen in the news. You know, there was those black women on the train and out in California who they got complaints because they were being too rowdy, even though they were just as loud as anybody else on the train or just as calm as anybody out as the train. And then you see these white people calling her out for being loud. Do you think that there's a racial element to that at all?
Yes, there's a very fierce racial element to it because it's their way of trying to use other forces to try to curtail somebody. And curtail comes in many forms.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is a person like Silky don't let a motherfucker stop her.
Well, I think she might be the first, you know, thick and juicy winner.
Because rumor is she's top three. That's a rumor.
We don't know anything that everybody that well, isn't a freely available on the internet. Well, but that's the rumor out there.
Well, for me, I already think that Drag Race already had a big girl winner. As a matter of fact, two from my perspective, one would have been Delta Work and the other one Eureka. So even though both of those girls never carried a physical crown themselves, to me, they were the winners of the big girl section of Drag Race because they are very good at what they do. They're very tight in their presentation and they give looks.
They
can perform the house down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm listening.
Do you think RuPaul could do like the Continental pageant, which is the big pageant here in Chicago or international, really, where they have like the regular and then they have the plus for the big girls and then they have the elite for the over 40? You think we'll see like a splitting or a variation for Drag Race?
No, because I believe that all drag should be able to compete equally in terms of if the criteria is man with bearded face transforming to become a woman and compete, then everybody should be able to compete regardless of what size they are. I don't believe in sizes for these things. No. Because guess what? There are some big people who move on their feet like they are size two bitches. Look at Latrice. You turn on that music and tell Latrice to lip sync for her life. You cannot tell Latrice she is 6'2 and weighs, you know, 190 pounds. In Latrice's head, she is a 5'1 girl at 98 pounds and she is slaying the stage. That's what's going on in Latrice's head. The same thing in my head and other. I don't believe in using weight as an excuse for I can't achieve my best. It's all equal.
Now, what about Brooklyn Heights, the thirst trap of season 11, much like Cameron Michaels? She's known as somebody with a, muscular, masculine body out of drag. And in drag, she's seen as a very sensuous, traditionally attractive woman.
Well, here's the problem. This question can't apply to me because men who put on female clothing, I can't look at them in a sexual way or as a boy and be like, ooh, bitch, she look good. Girl, my brain don't work like that.
Yeah.
But so you wouldn't be bumping pussies with Mark after seeing him in drag.
I don't do pocketbooks, darling. Sorry. Gucci or Fendi or Louboutins. Honey, it's an aversion to everything in my genetic code.
Now, Kahana Montrese, she's another thirst trap. She's the Coco Montrese's drag daughter, I think she's the most attractive contestant out of costume this season. Was?
I would say so too. Yes, yeah. But again, me and pocketbooks ain't never been friends.
Why do you call them pocketbooks?
Because this thing is like two big old pocketbooks in the club bumping against each other. I have the same thing that they have, so why the hell would I be into it? Bumping pocketbooks is an old drag terminology for we don't kai kai. And by the word kai kai or bumping pocketbooks, we're talking this is older than the 90s.
So sister Dick will make you sick, is what you're saying.
Honey, all that in a bag of chips. Now, yes, there are. Girls who are into other girls, we call those bitches octopuses.
Why do you call them octopuses?
because they got tentacles and they like to wrap it around anybody. They don't care who the other queen is, as long as they can get a chance to get a piece of something, they will try. Whereas a queen like me is like, back the fuck up, bitch, I'll slap you and kill everybody in your family. Don't touch me and don't look at me like that.
Well, what do you think about, you know, RuPaul saying that they would never have a trans contestant on the show, but now they have Duck Tran, who's Plastique Tiara. Yeah, real name Duck Tran.
Duck Tran. I love her. Wasn't she on Drag Race in Thailand, or she's
Vietnamese?
She's Vietnamese. Okay, but she wasn't. She because everybody, fans of Drag Race, have been very excited about Drag Race Thailand. Mm-hmm. That you can, I guess, you can catch it on social media or something. It's hard to catch, but. And it's hard to understand because half of the show or most of the show is in
Thai. It's done in Thai, and they don't have a translator. It's not a translator. And even if there was a translator, it's not going to sound the same because the translator is not really speaking in those girls' voices. It's somebody else trying to do a voiceover and trying to translate it to English. So it will never, the reaction, what they need to do with Drag Race Thailand is just put subtitles. It needs closed caption.
I think it has
on the
subtitles,
body.
Though. Parts of the show do, you know.
But not all parts.
But it's fun to see Plastique Tiara or Duck Tran on the show, and it's certainly like she adds an element that normally isn't there of somebody who English.
I'm still trying to figure out how she became Melissa Edwards' daughter, because I don't see it.
Well, you could argue that you and I are drag sisters. It's just friends, you know, friends, friendships.
Well, did they dance together? Is that what's the deal? Did they come up in the same clubs? That's how it goes. Yeah. I mean, does she look like her? Does she do her makeup like her? You don't have to be a drag daughter.
No. I know. It just seems. Well, then again, let's be realistic. Alyssa Edwards has proved that race don't mean shit when it comes to her children. She's got Shangela LaGanja. Who else she's got over there?
She's the Josephine Baker of drag.
Bitch, don't even. You can only be the Josephine Baker of drag if your ass is black. Don't try it. They would need a.
Wait, who's the one who did the banana thing? Was that?
That was Josephine Baker.
No, but like last on All Stars.
That was Monique Hart.
Monique Hart.
But I would say if there was a Josephine Baker of drag, the dearly departed has already left us, and that would be Sahara Davenport, because that bitch could dance a motherfucking house down.
It's a little confusing to hear Raja O'Hara's spoken, because they all say Raja, but this is Raja with an H, and she's definitely shook by
Raja. It's not Raja, it's Raja.
Raja. So she's from Dallas. She's the daughter of Silky O'Hara and connected to Calexis Davenport and the rest of the Davenport family, and she is butting heads with Silky Ganache.
Are they really?
That's where they're pitting them up against each other, you know, and certainly like.
Isn't she the one from Africa?
No, that would be Mercedes. That would be Mercedes Diamond, another. Who can't? This whole week I'm having this is my pet peeve. There are legendary words spoken from Paris is Burning. Children, learn it. And I'm not saying it's Mercedes' job to learn it properly, but I do understand that there is a dialect differentiation between what she's perceiving and what came out of her mouth. I don't like the fact that I'm on social media and everybody's going, Apollonge, you earn everything. I understand it's them thinking it's cute, but as somebody who's from the original scene of all of this, I don't like to hear my words or a culture's words being minced and thrown down to something else. It's opulence. You own everything. And yes, Michelle Visage was trying to correct her, but for some strange reason, it keeps coming out the other way. Opulence. I'm just going to leave it as it's her ability to speak English, since it's not her first language. So that's how it's coming up. But either way, Mercedes, you did a wonderful job last week. You survived death in terms of elimination. Mm-hmm. And so you keep moving forward, girl.
She had a stroke. She survived death several times.
So catch this, Kiki. Last night, a queen from New York City went online and said, "If you don't catch a stroke doing drag, you ain't doing it right." And people got offended. And people got offended by Mary Cherry making this statement. So I wrote on her page, "You wrong," and I'm not writing you wrong for no reason. I'm just saying, bitch, I can't believe you went there. The reason why. Mary Cherry is allowed to make that statement is because what most people don't know is Mary Cherry actually had a stroke last year while doing drag.
Oh, shit. Is she okay?
Yes. She's managed to rehab herself. She's a plus size lady. And because of what happened, it actually forced her and her grandmother, who she lives with, or I think she lives with her, to... The minute she had that stroke, they physically stopped eating black people food and literally started trying to have a more healthier diet. Mary Cherry having a stroke was not a negative thing. It forced her to change her diet. You know, sometimes a life-changing event can force you to see things in a different perspective.
Sure.
But Mary Cherry wrote it online last night, and many people sent her messages being offended. And I'm like, if you don't know Mary Cherry's story, please shut the hell up.
That's fair.
Because Mary Cherry was the most recent person who can say she had a stroke doing drag. And Mary Cherry is also the one who's in charge of the Bushwick Drag Festival that happens every year in New York that Lady Bunny raves about. And you got to remember, she takes on a lot of responsibility trying to get a lot of things done in New York. So it could, you know, potentially give her a stroke, which it did. And in Mercedes Diamond defense, she said she caught a stroke from just the thought of being on President Trump watch list.
She had to drive everywhere.
It's like, well, think about this. This poor girl is stressed out, you know, just because she has a Muslim back last name and first name, that this president with his bans and all this other stuff has made her feel so subpar and so substandard that it caused her a stress. Imagine how other people from other nationalities, you know, especially from the Muslim faith, feel. I'm sure there are probably other people out there that are having strokes too when they realize the disparaging and the disenfranchisement of this president's tone and actions. You know, poor baby. She had a stroke.
Another queen who has defied death and is reborn like a phoenix is these cookies. Our cookie monster, Vanessa Vanji Mateo, who
I could be a cool dad too. Honey, when Miss Vanjie tried to jump into different accents last week based on Michelle Visage's directions, bitch, at one point she sounded like Grover from Sesame Street.
I wouldn't complain seeing a sitcom where Vanessa Vanjie Mateo plays somebody's dad.
I would have a freaking Kiki tune watching that. Yes, yeah. No, you're absolutely correct. And let's be realistic. You know, as I said, starting from last season, you could tell that this is the new age, because also remember last season they started bringing on YouTube influencers onto Drag Race to make decisions or speak to the queen. And a lot of people who I know from the scene believe that YouTube influencers should not be on Drag Race.
Why do you not feel that way? Why shouldn't they? Or
because drag is about the art of drag, not just because you're here for popular numbers.
Sure.
Once you start to make the show too cheesy, the people who fully respect drag the proper way and see drag as the power of what it can do, it doesn't get taken. You know, now you open up the door for people who are only coming here for viral sensation, not people who have put down roots in drag to try to make a positive change for the planet. You know, because for people like me and other queens that have been doing this for years, we didn't come to drag for shits and giggles. We came to drag with a purpose. We came to drag with a direction of what we want to use this platform to do, to shape the future, to make things a better. I personally chose to work in straight clubs to change straight people's minds on drag. I remember the first time I walked into a straight club, they was like, "It's a faggot, kill it."
Yeah.
They were not joking.
Oh, I believe you.
They were not joking. And you know, to then try to just now try to take drag into the realm of, oh, let's put people on the show because it's a viral thing. Well, the rest of us have hard struggled for years, and many other people have come up within that vein. It's like, sweetie, you're getting a free carte blanche for all the wrong reasons. It's like people, it's like, for me personally, I don't even perform artists that are not LGBT friendly.
So yeah, part of me is like coming of age as a drag queen in Austin, Texas. The gay bars were not necessarily welcoming for drag acts, and a lot of them actually had rules that if you were in a costume, you couldn't get in. For a lot of drag queens like my, of my generation, straight clubs, especially music venues, because of the influence of RuPaul and Kurt Cobain and their friendship, straight music venues were some of the few places that were very welcoming towards drag queens at the time.
This is what I found out. When you meet a club that is like that, it is not... We do have a person like that in New York. I will not call her name either. We'll call her Voldemort 2, example.
Yeah.
But when you meet people like that, you have to understand there are certain gays who believe that drag is an embarrassment, an abomination onto the LGBT platform.
To be fair, some drag is. To be fair,
No. Not some. All drags. They believe that man dressing up in drag, emasculates the LGBT community. And I'm like, listen, motherfucker, if it wasn't for drag queens, your little faggot ass wouldn't be sucking dick anywhere. Period. Because our presence breaks. It breaks the silence in somebody's mind on intolerance and ignorance. A drag queen walking out into the world, even if they say nothing, just their presence walking past somebody's eye vision starts a dialogue internally in their minds and in their brains and in their hearts. Do I accept it? Do I not accept it? I'm going to go out and tell my other friends, I saw this faggot in a dress and I think I want to kill it. Mm. It starts a dialogue. We are the precursors of thought when it comes to defending the rights of LGBT people.
Nina West on the show isn't saying much with her mouth, but her facial expression says it all. And it seems like in a lot of ways, Nina West is kind of the audience. She's just kind of reacting to the shenanigans unfolding around her. And I'm living for it. I'm really enjoying her. She's mugging a lot. Yeah. And we met her at a drag festival outside where she was smoking, and she was like, "Don't you know who I am?" I'm like, "You're out of drag. I have no idea who you are."
She wasn't necessarily like that, was she?
Oh, totally. She knew who we were, yes, but well, I didn't know who she was
because we're out of drag and stuff.
Well, thing, you don't do drag when you do Feast of Fun. You're dressed as boys, so no, she would know who you are with your little size 2 beard on and the 6 o'clock shadow, looking like you just came out of gym and had a boy at the glory hole for dinner. You of course would not know who she is because most drag queens have double personalities. As a matter of fact, when I was leaving Mexico City the other night from a show that I was doing with Valentina, I had already taken off the makeup and we got back to our hotel, and some of the fans had found out we were staying, and like a whole bunch of them showed up at the front door going, "Can we have a picture?" I'm like, "Honey, I don't do pictures as a boy out of drag. This is my private life. I don't even want you to know what I look like as a boy, because my private life is where I get to live me without being bothered. I don't want a lot of drag queens want people to know them in and out of drag 24/7. Bitch, I don't want to be that person. I like to know that I can go out and be a silent assassin, a smooth criminal, as Michael Jackson would say, and do me and enjoy life.
I got to say, I went to see Lady Bunny's show at the Stonewall Inn with you, and everybody in the audience was like, "Is that Vivacious?" And I'm like, "What do you think?"
And I said, "No." I said, "No, that's
and
not
they
me."
They thought
bitch.
You were insane.
It's Desmond Tutu.
Yes. I like to live my life in private. I like to live when I take the geisha off, I don't need you to know who the hell I am unless you're a close friend. Because it allows me to, I'll disappear in the crowd and you won't notice that I'm not there. as Christine W. would say in one of her tracks. I like to be that person. And when I leave, I like to give you scent of a geisha. And when I walk out the door, I'm like, yes, it was me. And then 3 days later, you process it in the head. Oh, bitch, that was her. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I like that shock of it, but no, you don't need to know me out of drag. Mm-hmm. So yes, in terms of Nina, Miss Nina West, yes, you wouldn't know who she was as a boy standing outside smoking a cigarette because you've actually never seen her many, many times out of drag. And I'm sure the first time that every time you've met a drag queen out of drag, you look at them a few times because your brain going, I need to mentally map and study and record this bitch so the next time I see her, I can be like, bitch, I know you.
Mm. Yeah, you have to have drag-a-vision.
But Nina's video Nina's video where she did that drag costume where she had all those little people as part of her costume and they came out from her dress. Like, that was that was a real viral moment that was huge. Mm. And I think it was probably six years. Yeah.
It was so viral that Sia decided to adapt it into one of her performances. Mm-hmm.
So Nina West conceived that.
I don't. She had. I don't know.
Or
if
was she
the,
paying tribute to Sia?
No, Sia took it from her.
Oh, okay.
Because it went so viral. But I don't know if she conceived the concept herself, or if she'd seen. You know, listen. Nothing's new. Everything's old under the sun.
But Nina
West
can take credit for introducing it to the mainstream.
She did on Drag Race.
Yeah.
Nina had two things that went on the viral platform for her. That was one of them, and the second one was she had also dressed as Adele to go and see an Adele concert, and Adele brought her up on stage. So those two things put her on RuPaul's Drag Race radar. So a lot of queens over the years, they're, you know, different little things that'll get them to be seen on that radar. So anything that you do in life is helpful. So that, which goes back to that story of, well, you know, you probably should probably be a little bit more like Silky. RuPaul is not telling any lies in that because Monet Exchange, there were a few things that got her to that show, not just because Bob the Drag Queen was her sister and sibling rivalry, but Monet ended up on a tour with Todrick Hall like a year and a half before touring as the MC for the show, rapping. And then Monet also did an expose out in Times Square where she went out as a boy and sat down and slowly put on her makeup before she went to work. And, you know, she was the crowd showed how people didn't come and scream at her, you know, for putting on her makeup. And this random lady from like Europe came up and started talking to her, and Monet invited her to the show, you know. And then she did it again on the Brooklyn Bridge, in the middle of the Brooklyn Bridge, where people walk back and forth to go between Manhattan and Brooklyn. It's a very busy walkway with gusting winds, and she did it there again. So, you know, it might take a little, you know, queens in the future who have a problem with thinking that too loud is too much, it might help you also, because at the end of the day, sometimes being loud can help win over some straight folks to our side, and sometimes being mildly quiet might help you disappear into the background. I, for my personal taste, know that all my costumes are very loud. And so I speak with my looks and bring people into my world, and then I use my knowledge to break their hearts into our direction. And that's how I used my drag for many years to break down so many people who walked into clubs who's like, when I first saw you, all I wanted to do was figure out how to bring you out in the back of the club and lynch you. I've actually had somebody brought a noose to me in a club once before.
Did they think you were hung or something?
No, he was trying to say, we don't want no niggas over here. I said, listen something, motherfucker. I said... I said, let me explain something to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you're a manager in this club out here in Miss Long Island, but I have some very shocking news for you. I just signed a contract to be here for X and X and X and X amount of months, which is probably over about 24 months. But guess what's not going to happen?
What?
From this day forward, you will never be invited inside this club as a manager while I'm here bringing my entertainers. I am pitting my paycheck against yours. You see, Long Island actually needs me because the crowd that comes out here, they all came here to see me. They didn't come to see the manager. So if they don't want me to walk down to the block to the competition and give my show with my dancers and performances to put this club out of business tonight, you will not be here anymore on the nights that I come here. And now you're chopped. That's the power of a black bitch that's in charge of a room full of females that are both white and black.
So you're telling me a manager at a club in Long Island, you were set to perform, and he brought you a noose to tell you you were not wanted
bitch,
here.
To try to let me know that he thought that he was in charge of... He was in charge of Bartertown, and I showed him who the real motherfucking Tina Turner was. Okay? This bitch runs Bartertown.
Two queens enter, one queen leaves.
Two queens enter, and his ass left. Okay?
Well, I'm really sorry you had to go through that. That's a disgusting behavior.
No. You have to understand something. It takes many white motherfuckers to get a black motherfucker down. One white person cannot lynch a black motherfucker because we will fight back and kick their ass. So they show up in vans and in droves to overpower that one queen so that they can lynch them. That's how they do it. It takes a bunch of them to get the job done. See, they know they can't fight one-on-one. And let me tell you something. Me with my martial arts degree background, every time I go to a club, best be assured, everything in mother's bag is a martial arts weapon. You just think it looks like makeup, but honey, those are some brushes that will use to stab you in very important vital organs and take you out. I'm not a stupid bitch.
So when Soju entered the workroom flinging nunchucks, she wasn't kidding either.
That was her being a literal queen, honey. Yes, yeah. I'm also a martial artist queen. I don't need to bring the nunchucks, but back in the day, when I did start in the club scene, I used to bring swords to the club and perform katas on stage so that people would realize, oh, she ain't playing around. That bitch actually does know how to use a sword like a real martial artist.
There's a quiz that's being passed around. Which season 11 queen are you? And a lot of people are complaining because Soju often comes up as the result.
And nobody wants to go home first.
But I took it, and Evie Oddly is the queen that's most like me. She's from Denver, Colorado. She's sort of compared a lot to Nina Flowers, because she's her protege, actually, and takes pride in her beyond outrageous looks, using unconventional materials and looking from an alien creature to a standard gorgeous queen. I like her. I like everything she says, too.
I like her energy because, for one, she's the only bitch in the room. Even though, you know, I think she won recently in Denver where she ended up looking like a pageant queen in the end. But it's like the reason why I like her is because everybody has showed up to the competition looking like some form of a pageant queen for season 11. And here comes this odd bitch walking into the room with a boa on the floor with a remote control car. Mm-hmm. And everybody was like, what the fuck is that? I'm like, sweetie, I like everything in life odd. If every day was a sunny day, there would be no sunny day.
Are we forgetting? I know Sugar Cane, she's a New York City girl, part of your scene, I guess. But I don't really know too much about her.
Well, I don't know anything about her either, but what I do think is this. This is what my roommate and I, we've come to the conclusion. We think that she is a theater girl and has always been a theater girl, but she's highly trained. She's kind of like a Bianca Del Rio, where she doesn't run around and tell people she's a theater girl, and then she only recently transposed herself from theater to doing the drag aspect of it. But for her being in the game for so long, even though she's only been doing drag for about a year and a half, she's adapted quite well to drag, and it makes it seem as though she's been doing it quite longer.
Well, even if you haven't been consciously dressing up as a drag queen and performing as a drag queen, if you've been a makeup artist, notes, a comedian, a performer.
And I think she has a makeup. I think she's like a makeup artist in her background somehow also. But also, you could tell that her theater her theater spirit is very, you know, a lot of queens come on Drag Race. I'm a theater girl. Bitch, shut the hell up. We saw you lose to other queens who didn't say they were theater girls, but who in actuality was theater girls? You know, Bianca in my season, Robbie Turner jumping up.
When you describe Bianca as a theater queen, she's been doing drag since 1991 or 92 in New Orleans. But and she worked in the theater doing costumes, right? Actor.
Right. Well, here's the thing. So even when I was in college, what happened was, in my freshman year, I walked in on the height of when Supermodel came out. Supermodel came out about 3 weeks before, and I walked into the theater department, which is something I have no background in. Church plays as little kids don't count. I walked into the theater department. My major was biology and physical therapy. Walked into the theater department and said, "Hi, I need 5 girl dancers because I'm going to teach them how to walk runway and how to Vogue, and I'm going to perform RuPaul's Supermodel. You better work." And they looked at me like, "Have you danced before a day in your life?" I said, "Nope, but I know exactly what I need to do." They're like, "Have you choreographed before?" I said, "Nope, but I know what I can do." And they gave me 5 girls. And I turned out the performance with the 5 girls on stage. Mm-hmm. The theater department then turned around and go, "We want to encourage you to maybe you should probably look into being a dance major or something. So we're going to give you a partial scholarship and have you come and take dance classes in the meantime." I'm like, "Okay, any money that's going to help me cut my scholarship, my tuition in half, I'm going to take it." So part of the course was you had to do community service back to the theater department, and you could either do it in lights, costume designing, or something else. So I'm like, "Well, you know what? I was a little gay boy under my mother's sewing machine." She had the old school Singer one that you had to manually press with your foot back and forth to stitch the clothing. So this is like a machine built like what, in the 1930s? Mm-hmm. So since I was the foot pedal person for my mother's machine and I watched her sewing everything growing up, I decided, well, maybe I should take costume designing for 6 months just to, learn, because it's kind of in my blood watching my mother all those years making all our clothing. So I chose that. So in Bianca's sense, she chose wig. That doesn't mean she wasn't a theater major. She's always been a theater major. It's part of every theater curriculum that you choose the section that you want to be in, or you choose the section that you want to learn more from. So you have 4 years that you could literally go through all departments. Some people chose electronics and carpentry. Some people chose CGI and, special effects and makeup and all this other stuff. So, but Bianca's background she's a full theater girl. I've seen videos online with Bianca doing full tap dance and numbers. And it's like, Bianca never said she was a tap dancer. Bianca never said she was a tap girl, but guess what she does? When it comes time to, "I'm going to put you in that situation," Bianca shows you why she is a leading bitch, because she is all that in a bag of chips. It's just that she doesn't run around and go, "I'm a theater girl." She lets her talent speak for herself, whereas other insecure queens like to run around, "I'm a theater girl." Look at Jinx Monsoon. She never said she was a theater girl. She just kept on winning challenges.
What can people learn about Drag Race? I mean, we've analyzed it a lot over the past decade now.
Right. Could you believe that it's a decade now? Wow.
Honey, crazy, huh?
Believe me, it's like I just shaved my beard and it's all coming out gray. And I was like, "Holy shit, I've been dyeing my beard so long that it's like I didn't realize I was gray underneath it."
Grey's anatomy, bitch.
But the thing about it is, it's like I feel like there's some articles that are saying that the show is in decline to some degree because it's relying on over tropes, but I'm not, I think there's a buyer's remorse whenever the new season starts, everybody's sort of has a general reaction of their like a lack of interest. And it's only until the episodes start airing where we sort of falling in love with the new batch of girls and learning about ourselves by seeing these people who have stars in their eyes, who may not necessarily have the skills they need to make it all the way to the end, to somehow triumph despite their lack of experience or knowledge in something.
I find that insecure people like to live vicariously through other people and project their own fears mm-hmm. into the universe against these people. So, like, for instance, we all know that the reason why people like to say a lot of negative shit about Silky, she's black and she's fat. Bitch, give me something else. She's black, she's loud, she's fat. Yeah. Give me something else of why you hate her. But you can't, but you'll try to come up with a whole million different types of verboseness to try mm-hmm. to make some little small paltry excuses for your actions. It happens. But at the end of the day, people could say the show is in decline. It's not in decline. Here's the thing. For every one gay person that turns off the channel, there is 300 more straight people falling in love with the show. So you can either stay in the past and be that bitter child over because you didn't like the fact that this queen came on the show. You have a problem with that other one. You have a problem with that other one. You hear these queens all the time. Oh, my God, you're my favorite fan. And I always go, bitch, I'm not your favorite fan, because as soon as I leave, you go walk over to Bianca Del Rio. Oh, my God, you're my favorite fan. I said, just be real and just say hello.
It's like your Grindr
trick. Just
tricks.
Be real and say hello.
Well, part of it is like people don't want, they want to connect with you. They just don't know what to say or do.
Well, here's the thing. Instead of being fake, just say hi. Yeah. I respect a hi over somebody who walks up to me. Oh, Miss Girl, I live. Because, honey, when you come to me with all that extra blather Skype, that's the word from DuckTales with Scrooge McDuck, I'm not into it. I, you know, Silky Ganache made a statement 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when she did her Cosmopolitan tutorial. She said, I'd rather have 500 ride or die bitches than 100,000 fake motherfuckers on my account. She is right, and I'm the same way.
Yeah, I feel that. I'm starting to feel that way, too, with Facebook. It's like, I get all these friend I post a photo of myself in drag, and the type of friend requests I get dramatically changes. And they're not, to me, I'm like, why are you requesting to become friends with somebody who
you
don't know?
If you want to just put them down. If you want to put them down.
Or to put them down, yeah.
Right. And so for me, think about this. I'm a black queen. That is, I'm the original Evie Oddly. Think about that. My costume does not fall within the norms of what? Yeah. Drag Race is trying to push out into the world. You need to be a pretty queen. I mean, think about how many times they try to turn Monique, Monet's little kitten wigs into a bad thing. There is nothing wrong with a short hair, honey. She's a carrying queen. She's a dancing queen. We all know that wig designers make cheap ass wigs that can't stay up when you perform. And if you try to do the type of performances that Monet does and I do and other queens who kiki and carry on, you put on any of those wigs, that bitch is going to fall over in 3 seconds. So that's why we put on them little short hair so we could get the job done and still stay in character instead of keep worrying about why the Eiffel Tower is leaning to the left and the right. It's like you finish the show and you look like I'm Gone with the Wind, honey. It's like your hair is, you know, up in the air having a heart attack with Jesus in a cyclone. So these things do happen, but, you know, you just got to learn to, like, accept that these queens coming onto the show is just a new breath of fresh air. You don't need to hate on them. Just go, give me a reason to love you more. That's how you should look at the show, because guess what? Eventually, you might end up liking a whole bunch of them. But the sad part that I find a lot with the fan base is, if the queen don't look pretty, I'm going to say negative things about that queen. If the queen don't fall into my version, you know, it's so funny. I believe that if you create an app tomorrow where it says my perfect avatar, you would find that 90% of the gays only want to try to identify with things that are pretty, 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 pretty. Bitch, I'm not from that school. I like things that's going to make me stand out. All these girls are wearing Arda wigs. All these girls are wearing gypsy wigs. All these girls are wearing, you know, wigs and grace and whatever other. They all look like Attack of the Clones.
If you could cast the perfect top three, because let's face it, usually the top three are not necessarily the best queens of the season. They're sometimes just the ones who manage to win or to navigate politically up into there. If in your top three queens in an ideal world, who would they be?
I would take Silky, Evie Oddly, and
Vanessa Vanjie Matteo.
Vanessa Vanjie Matteo with a hint of Nina West.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like I'm torn.
The rest of them, I don't really see and feature. And I'm going to tell you why, because it's like, I know where Nina West is coming from. You have to understand, out of that whole season, the only one who is very beholden to what RuPaul has accomplished for the LGBT community is probably only Nina. The rest of them might, say that they do, but we all know that's bullshit. They're just here for the exposure so that they can use her platform to try to get theirs. I am still grateful to RuPaul for opening up her platform to us, because she didn't have to. And then when you have Vanjie Matteo prove that she can take a disastrous losing from the season before, and even though she didn't turn it into what it became, mm-hmm. she went out every single day. Miss Vanjie Matteo went out and performed. Have you seen her perform? Mm-hmm. She can dance.
Oh, yeah.
She got moves. And death drops, too.
So it's Puerto Rican Vanjie, queens. Amen, honey.
Vanjie Matteo proves that she took a very negative situation that could have been her destruction. Mm-hmm. And because everybody has turned it into some social media hyper madness, she took it and she ran with it. And in the process, by her doing all those gigs that whole year, she has grown significantly. Let me tell you something. Just that one day alone, those 2 days alone of being in Mexico with Violet Chachki and the other girls when we did the Star Pro event, I learned so many drag tricks from all of them, because we were just in the room just like spouting out. Not because we were doing it on purpose. We were like, oh, girl, use this. Oh, girl, use that. Oh, girl, here's this trick. Oh, girl, here's that trick. Just being around them, you hear things that will help you improve your drag significantly.
Oh, yeah.
And then if you take in all that message, you'll realize that you'll become a more refined queen within a short period of time. And Vanjie has been able to be around those girls for the one year that she's been off TV. And so it's allowed her to grow, and then you have a Silky Ganache, which to me, Delta Work should have been the original Silky Ganache or Eureka. I live for both of those bitches because they give me a more stronger sense of Delta Work is a confident big lady. When Delta Work walked in, she said, I'm not like all these other big girls who find excuses for being a big girl. Delta Work gets the motherfucking job done. She's a thunderstorm.
Amen.
Then you have Eureka coming years later, and she's like, I might be a loud girl, but honey, I'm going to throw this down as though I was a size bitch size two. Latrice did the same thing too, And they proven throughout the years that they have what it takes to be that winner for Drag Race. And yes, they didn't get that position, but now we have a Silky Ganache. She's loud. I think she's really pulling a Laganja a la Adore Delano, looking at her through her. She's like, girl, that's not the woman I grew up with. It doesn't matter.
And maybe that's, just a facet of her that we don't necessarily get to see. Everybody can do that. I don't think it's unreasonable to expect that from somebody.
I don't know. I think it's her playing for the camera. That's everything in my spidey sense is telling me that's her playing for the camera. And Silky, if that's what it takes to unravel all these other bitches so you could get farther in the show, bitch, you came in with the best motherfucking head game out of everybody else.
It's Silky's season to lose. Vivacious, thank you so much for kicking with us about this season, this new motley crew of crazy queens.
Mm-hmm. These oddly children of the 11th season, a decade and one, honey. Here we go.
Did we talk about Evie Oddly?
Yeah, okay. For 40 minutes.
You said out there, like, wait a second, did we? There's so many queens, but what's on your plate? What's going on with you these days, Vivacious?
Right now, I am fixing the last flaw in the Vivacious armor, and that is here.
Okay. So you're going to become like, queen of the wig association is what you're saying.
Honey, wigometry, wigafoo, something, honey.
Wigafoo?
I am here. Wigafoo. I'm here for all the wigamatries and the wigamaholics and you know, wigafrella, color, whatever her damn name is. I'm here to do all of that stuff. So I'm hoping that if I can break through this one last piece, you know, somebody goes, "Oh, we would love to have you on All-Stars 5. And I'm like, no, I'd rather rate for All-Stars 6 because then you could go Vivacious from season 6 on All-Stars 6. See, it's 6-6.
6-6.
6-6 sickening. So, you know, they can put me on for that one because by then I will now have finished up the last part of my journey. And for many years, wig has been a big bane it's been my kryptonite. So I'm over here learning this right now. And in the process also, I am still moving forward and doing music production on my own. I just posted a part of a clip on Instagram the other day for my Mother Has Arrived track. And the section that I posted was the end of the track. It wasn't a verse and a chorus. It's like, she'll turn the show. She'll turn you out. Now book a queen, mother. She'll give you look, never shade. Now that's a queen mother, you know. So I'm doing both of those simultaneously, and in the meantime, just also with my manager, just lining up work for the rest of the year until a bitch jumps on the ports again and get back out there, and you know, for somebody who left third, the lowest third of her season, I'm still out there working. And you could tell with a lot of other drag queens, they went further in the show and you don't even see them anywhere working. And it's because they don't apply to them. This was just a ploy to get on a TV show. No, darling, drag is my life. So somebody out there, go call up World of Wonder, go call up Theron, go call up all them other damn producers and you tell them she needs to be on All Stars because at the end of the day, I plan on my legacy of what I want to bring to the world is something bigger than just saying I'm a drag queen. I want to leave at my end game. I want to put something out into the world that benefits many queens properly because queens globally and queens in New York and queens in the United States are being taken advantage of as local queens in terms of this bar of, oh, I could do the job better than you, so I'm going to ask the owner to give me less money. This whole thing of $50 queens, I don't see this shit. It needs to stop.
It needs to stop. Oh, I forgot to ask you about your island sister, 70-year-old Grace Jones, stealing the show at the Hilfiger show in Paris Week.
Wasn't she gorgeous?
She was gorgeous. I'm looking at these photos, and it's just so hard to be. I'm like, that's a 70-year-old.
Wow, I saw her. I said, oh, this queen is an amazing Grace Jones impersonator. She looks identical to Grace Jones.
Well, I have a friend named Ebony Excel, and she's from Haiti, and she is a Grace Jones impersonator. She likes to do a lot of Grace Jones numbers, and she likes to perform La Vie en Rose. And, you know, when she hits that long note section, Ebony slowly takes her leg up from the ground and brings it all the way up into a split in midair without holding it. Yeah. And she holds it there. And Ebony's like 55 years old and she's, you know, she's been doing drag for a while. So it's like, I hope Miss Ebony auditions and get on that damn show too, because I would love to see a Haitian queen make it to RuPaul's Drag Race. Ebony, you know what you need to do? Get to it, girl.
Get on it, girl.
Get to it.
Well, thank you very much, Vivacious. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much for
having me. Anytime.
We haven't done this in a while, so this was a nice kiki.
It was a nice kiki.
I always have a good time. You know, you and I talk on the phone about 6 times a week, but it's nice to, it is a heightened experience to do a podcast with you.
I like doing podcasts. They're lots of fun. And to all the wonderful fans out there, thank you for always tuning in and listening to Feast of Fun. And one of the things that I took away from Feast of Fun is I went to multiple countries in 2018 and met so many fan bases who came up to me in other countries and said, "We listen to you on Feast of Fun." Oh. I'm like, "Ooh, this shit is working."
Oh, yeah.
So, Feast of Fun, your reach is reaching.
Thank you. I hope you tell them to subscribe.
Actually, no. For the fact that they do listen, it means that they were already subscribing because,
I mean, you know, pay money.
Become a Feast of Fun Plus subscriber
at feastoffun.com/plus, because the only way we're able to talk to you, Vivacious, is because of those people that step forward and say, I support the show, I support what they do, and I want to hear more of it.
Yes.
Yes, Mama.
Yes, Mama. We are days away from kicking off our Patreon page. We're going to give people a lot of behind-the-scenes video footage, images and stories and podcasts that have never aired before. Mm. In 15 years of doing this podcast, we have a treasure vault. And wow. We are breaking it open, cracking the safe, honey. And I'm going to be showing you shit. Vivacious, the day we vet Vivacious, footage of that. No one's ever seen that.
Don't forget to also give him a sneak peek for some of those queens that are trying to figure out how to make that big buxom here off the one that you all did with Perfidia, because that can also help some of these queens become self-sustaining on their own. Mm-hmm. So, you know, stick that in that Patreon, too.
I will, honey. It is going to be a world of fun. And, honey, it all starts with $1. And a dollar goes a long way, honey. Just put a dollar in our tip jar. We're sharing a moment. We're I make eye contact when you give me a dollar, honey. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I look at you in the eye and I say, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Feast of Fun, 15 years, a treasure trove of knowledge. It's something that everyone should be into, so make sure you support children.
It's like a Noah's Ark. What is it? Vivacious Noah's Ark of Dick. I'm still laughing about that. Two by two, the dicks went in.
Yes, honey. 4x4, the balls of no sin.
Mm-hmm. All right, Vivacious.
I love you, my sister.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, my sisters.
Fisters.
Fister, sister. Bye, sweetie.
Bye, love.
Bye.
Vivacious lives in New York City, Vivacious NYC on all kinds of social media. And of course, you can find our links through our website, feastoffun.com. I want to share a little story today. I was walking home, and it's like we work so hard and we put a lot of our heart and soul into these projects. And, you know, it is, we definitely, live on the razor's edge financially in doing this show. It's not easy. And so for every person that comes and steps forward, it's truly a blessing. You know, this past year's my body gave out, our car gave out, our computer gave out, and just so many things just broke apart. And I was just like at a real emotional and physical impasse. And you guys have stepped up. So people went to GoFundMe.com/FeastOfFunComputer and have donated. And I want to do a shout out to Ricardo, to John, to Jason, to Gary Dean, and lots of other people who have made such a huge difference. And one particular person donated a sizable contribution anonymously, but I just want to read their name because... That it's just such a beautiful, funny name, or their name is Mimi Money.
Mimi Money?
Mimi Money.
Well, all right. Thank you,
honey. Mimi Money. I was stopping, and when I saw that, I burst into tears.
Thank you, Mimi.
I was so moved by the generous donation that you gave, and you know, it really is. We are here on the shoulders of giants, the kindness of strangers. You guys make a big difference in our lives. And we are deeply in gratitude and humbled by your generosity. So thank you so much. Mark, I love you so much. You mean the world to me. It is such a blessing and such a gift to be able to do the show with you and to talk to so many extraordinary individuals together. And what you bring to the show is your unflappable ability, no matter how serious or gruesome or dark the conversation gets, you are able to find a ray of sunshine in it and a laugh and crack a joke and lighten the mood. And I'm grateful for that. I know the listeners are.
Thank you. Well, it's called Feast of Fun for a reason.
That's right, honey. And you are the fun. and I'm the feast.
I love you, darling.
Pull up a plate and gobble me up.
Bye, everybody.